All right. Hello, hello. Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
All righty. Okay, so tonight, we're almost there. Tonight, we're going to start where we left off on Lamed Aleph on the B's at the bottom. And we got the two dots. This is actually, so we're going to finish the fourth parak tonight. And this is also going to be the last night of the Gemara section of Maseches Tamid. The rest of Maseches Tamid will only be Mishnayos. So this is a cherish the last piece of Gemara. This is actually the last, not really relevant for us because we started with the beginning of Maseches Tamid. But this is actually the last Gemara. If someone's not on mute, I can actually do that quickly. I think I can mute everybody. So, all right. Great. All right. So anyway, today is actually the last Gemara in Seder Kodshim. We'll end with this, with the Gemara here, and then we'll start the next parak, leaving us right on track to finish on time. So we left off with the bottom of Lamed Aleph and Beis, and the Gemara is going to take a slight detour from the Hakrava process of the Karban Tumid and actually discuss a little bit of a story that took place between Alexander the Great. At least according to most Mefarshim, this is a reference to Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great appears a couple times in Shas. This is one of the main places where he appears in Shas. So there were discussions between Alexander the Great and some of our Chazal. So it's going to record some of those discussions right here tonight. And here we go. So the Gemara says, Asar Dvarim Shal Alexandrus Mukdon Eziknei HaNegev. The elders of the Negev, the elders of the south, were asked 10 different questions by Alexander the Great. Amr Lahen, he said to them, Min HaShemayim, La'aretz rachok, omi mizrach l'marav. What's the further distance from, if you would measure from the land all the way up to the sky, or if you would measure from the east side of the earth to the west side of the earth? What would be the larger distance? Amrulo, the Ziknei Negev said back to him, mi mizrach l'marav. It would be a further distance to go from east to west, all the way one side, from one side of the world to the other. Teda, how do I know this? Shaharei, chama b'mizrach hakol mistakvin ba. When the sun is in the east, you can look at it no problem. When it's rising in the east, you can look at it no problem. When it's setting in the west, also no problem. You can look at it without going blind. However, when the sun is up in the middle of the sky, so you can't look at it. So it must be that when it's to the east and the west, it's very, 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 very far away because you could look at it without being blinded. But if it's up in the middle, it must be much closer, and that's why you can't look at it. So it must be that the distance between east and west is much further than the distance between the earth and the sky. The Chachamim say, I agree that the distance between the east and the west than it is from the sky to the earth. However, I have a different proof. I'm not proving it to you from this very scientific method, but rather I'm going to prove it to you from a pasuk. Hachamim omrim zev zek. I'm sorry. They disagree. They say it is not. There's no difference. Hachamim omrim zev zek echad shavin. The distance between east and west and earth to sky is equal. Shneimar ki gavoa shamayim al haaretz ki rachok mimizrach mimaarav. The distance of the sun to the earth is similar to the distance of the earth of the east to the west. Now, these happen to be in two different psukim, and these two psukim appear in Tehillim, and they are a metaphor describing God's characteristics. And each one is saying that God has a lot of chesed, or God removes transgressions. So the chesed that Hashem has is like so great, it's like the distance between the east and the west, or it's so great, it's like the distance between the earth and the sun and the sky. So, but the point is that in both instances, they are equally used to show the greatness of God's attributes. So it must be that the distance in both those scenarios are the same because God's attributes are obviously all equally as great. So the Gemara says, "V'ichad minayu nafish." If it was really the case that either the distance between east to west or was greater than the distance between the earth to the sky or vice versa, if one distance was really greater than the other, so then the Gemara says, Nichtov Travayu Kiyahu Denafish. So whenever you're making a metaphor to describe God's attributes and how great they are, don't use two different metaphors that have different distances. Pick whichever one is the greatest distance and say that is how great Hashem's attribute is. Pick the greatest one and always use that as your metaphor. It must be that the metaphors are equal because they're both being used to describe the greatness of God's attributes, and God's attributes are equally as great, regardless of which particular one you're talking about. So the Gemara says, but we have this problem that the Ziknei of the Negev said, well, wait a second. I have a very strong argument that if you look up at the sky in the middle of the day and the sun is, you know, right there and smack in the middle of the sky, you stare at it, you're going to go blind. It must be that it's very, very close. So you haven't, now you're claiming to me that it's the same distance as if it was setting in the east or it was rising in the east or setting in the west. So why is it that if I look in the middle of the day, it's going to blind me? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why that is. The answer is, Mishum Tekoi Lahedja, Velo Kasi Lahamidi. It has nothing to do with how far away it is. It's equal distant the entire day. It's very far away, both in the morning, both in the night, both in the middle of the day. It's equally far away. It's just that in the middle of the day, when you look straight up, there's nothing blocking your view. If there's nothing blocking your view, so then the sun's going to be much stronger and you're going to be blinded. It's rising or setting, so then there's stuff that's blocking it, and therefore it is not going to be as powerful. Then the Gemara says, another question that Alexander the Great asked of the elders. Amar lahen, shamayim nivru tachila o ha'aretz. Which was created first, the heavens or the earth? Amru, shamayim nivru tachila. They said back to him that the shamayim, the sky, was created first. Now they're picking up the proof from the pasuk. Shenemar, v'reishis bar elokim es ha'shamayim es ha'aretz. The pasuk says that first Hashem created the Shemayim, and then he created the Aretz. It must be that the Shemayim was created first. Amar Lahen, so he says to him, I have another question for you. Or Nivra Tachila, O Choshech. So what was created first? Was light created first, or was darkness created first? Amru Lo, Milsada, Ein Lapeser. They say back to him, you know what? That question's so good, we don't have an answer for it. The other questions we had answers for, this one is such a good question, we don't have an answer for it. So the Gemara says, wait a second, how is this such a good question? V'neimru Le, they should have said back to him, Choshech nivra tchila. Darkness obviously was created first. Why? Dichsiv. The pasuk says, "Va'aretz haisa tohu vavohu." The land was filled, was chaotic. It was emptiness and nothingness. V'choshech, and there was darkness. V'hadar, and after the pasuk describes that there was tohu vavohu and choshech, then it says, "Vayomer Elokim yihi or." Hashem said, "Let there be light." Vayihi or, and there was light. So doesn't it seem pretty obvious if you read the beginning of Bereishis that there was darkness and then there was light? So what do you mean darkness? You know, I don't know if darkness was created first or light was created first. Of course, darkness was created first. So the Gemara said, no. The Ziknei of the Ziknei Negev, they knew that the pasuk says that darkness came first. Why didn't they tell Alexander this? Savri Dilma Asulishiuli. They didn't want to answer this question because they were like, wait a second. If we answer this question, then he might continue to ask us more questions. Mala mala umala mata, malafnim umala echor. They saw that as his questions were continuing, they were getting a little bit deeper and deeper, and they were nervous that if they continued to answer his questions, so he would start asking, well, what comes of what's beyond the universe and what's below the universe, what's before time, what's after time. They thought that he would start asking much more philosophical questions, and they didn't want to get into a philosophical conversation with him. So they said, you know what, let's stop it right here, and we'll pretend that we don't know what came first, darkness or light. So the Gemara says, that's very nice, may kara savar, but I'm sorry, ihachi, the Gemara says, if that's true, shamayim nami lo emrule. So if they didn't want him to continue to ask questions, so the minute he opened his mouth and asked the question, they should have just kept quiet, and they say, we don't know. If they don't want him to ask more questions, they should have pretended that they're stupid and that they don't know anything, and then they'll stop asking it, then he'll stop asking them questions. So why'd they answer any of his questions if they don't want to get into a deeper conversation with him? So the Gemara says, may kara savar akrai ba'almahu de kashoyal. No. They thought that he was just asking him a random question. He saw a guy in the street, so he asked him, you know, what's the greater distance, the earth to the sun, the earth to the sky, or the east to the west? That doesn't, you know, indicate that they're going to get into a philosophical conversation. But once they saw that he kept on asking more and more questions, then they realized they better stop this before it gets too philosophical. So the Gemara says, came the chazut to Kahadr Shayels. Once they saw that he was continuing to ask more questions, Sabri lo nemalei, they said maybe we shouldn't answer his questions. Dilma asi l'shiule mala 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 mata malafnim mala achor. Let's stop answering the questions because he might start asking more philosophical questions about what's beyond, what's below, what's before, what's after. So they wanted to stop here, but apparently it didn't work. Amar lahen, he said that he still continued asking questions. Eden mitkri chachin. He says to them, who is considered a wise man? Who's called a chacham? Amrulay, so they answer back to him, Ezehu chacham haroes anola. Who's considered a chacham? Somebody who is able to anticipate what the outcome of his actions are going to be, right? the Zikne Negev are kind of giving themselves a little pat on the back. They themselves just anticipated that if they continue to answer philosophical questions, so the questions will get more philosophical. So they were to iu roes anolad. They anticipated what would happen. So that's a sign of chachma. That's a sign of wisdom. That if you anticipate what's going to happen and you change your actions in accordance to what you expect to be the outcome, that is a sign of wisdom. Amr lahem. So he says to them another question. Eden miskri gribor. Who is considered to be a strong person? So this is something that we're familiar with, a line from Mishnah Perkei Avos, that who is considered a gibor? Someone who is able to exert self-control, self-restraint, that is considered a gibor. That is someone who is strong. Amr lehen, Eden miskri ashir, who is considered a wealthy person? Amr le, ezo ashir hasameach b'chalko. Again, a common phrase that we're, a common teaching that we're familiar with, who is considered a wealthy person? Someone who is happy with his lot. Amr lehen, he says to them another question, ma yavid inish v'yichya. What does somebody have to do in order to stay alive? So they answer back to him, Amrle yomis asmo. He has to kill himself. This doesn't mean kill himself literally. This means if you want to be alive, you want to have a life that's meaningful, so you have to put forth a lot of exert. Adam ki yomis oel, you have to put your effort into the Torah, you have to put your effort into chesed, you have to put your effort into being successful and developing and trying to progress and trying to grow. So someone who puts in a lot of effort, who tries hard, works hard, as if he's killing himself, so to speak, so that person will merit life, that person will have a meaningful life, a meaningful existence. Ma yavid inish vi amus. So he says, what do you have to do if you're what's gonna make someone be killed? What's gonna be an unsuccessful life? So they say yichya tzatzmo. You should make yourself alive. What does it mean, make yourself alive? So presumably it means that if you involve yourself with the physical elements of the world, you say, I'm living such a great life because I'm taking advantage of all the physical elements, all the gashmius in the world. So essentially what you're really doing is you're really killing yourself. So you want to live, kill yourself, put it forth effort, make sure that you're engaged in meaningful experiences and do them in a serious way and work very hard. If you want to ensure your path is going to be the path to demise, so then just live the life, enjoy all of the physical pleasures of the world, and that'll be a great way to ensure your demise. Amr lahen, ma yavid inish v'yiskabel al briyasa. He says, what should someone do if they want to be successfully accepted? They want to be popular amongst the brios, amongst the God's creations. What does someone have to do in order to be well received amongst other people? Amru, they said back to him, yisnei malcho v'shulton. You should hate kings and rulers. Probably an unwise thing to say to Alexander the Great, but they said it nonetheless. Amr lahu didi tava miditchu. He says, you know what? That's an interesting answer, but I don't agree with you. I think my answer is better. Here's what my answer is. Yirache malcho b'shilton. You should actually try and be compassionate, try and kiss up to the rulership. V'avad tivu imbene inchi. Because if you have a good connection to the ruler, if you have a good connection to people in power, so then you'll be able to ask for favors for people and people will like you because you'll be well connected. So that's what you really should do. Don't hate the rulership. You should actually try to become close to the government. And that way you'll be able to have connections and you'll be able to do favors for people. Amr lahen. So he asked them another question after he didn't like that answer and he gave him his own answer. He still has another question for them. Amr lahen, biyama ya'i lamedar o biyavashta ya'i lamedar. What's better? Is it better to live in the ocean or is it better to live on dry land? So they say back to him, Amr lahen, biyavashta ya'i lamedar. It's better to live in dry land. How do you know this? Because it's well known that anybody who's traveling at sea, they're uncomfortable, their anxiety is not calmed until they reach dry land. Everybody who's out at sea, they eventually want to get back to land. If you're on a cruise, you're enjoying yourself at sea, but everyone wants to get back to land, so it must be that land is better than the sea. Amr lahen, Eden minchon chachim yasir. He says to them, you guys all seem very, very smart, but I want to know, which one of you is really the wisest? Which one of you is the smartest of all? Amrulo, so the Zikne Negev say back to him, Kuna kechad shavin. We're all equally intelligent. Daha kol milsa d'amr slana b'chad pisran alach. Because every question that you've asked us so far, we've all collaborated and we've all given you the exact same answer. We all agree on any one of these questions. We're all saying the exact same thing because we're all equally as intelligent. Amr lahan, he says to them, Ma din atriston lekabli. Why are you guys so against accepting me? What is it about? You know, I'm a great, powerful man. I would expect that you should try to become friends with me. Why are you being so obstinate? Why are you being so against trying to accept me? So Amr le, Satna Netzach. They say, you know what? You might be very powerful. You might be a very impressive individual, but every once in a while, even the Satan wins. So you're just an example of the Satan taking over. We don't want to have anything to do with you. Amr Lohen, he says back to them, Ha'ana makatilna yaston b'gzeres malchin. So now he's getting fed up and he says, you know what? I've had it with you. I'm going to kill you with the decree of the king. So they say back to him, Amrulay shaltan biyad malcha. You have every right. You're the king. You're in control. You have the power. You can kill us if that's what you want to do. However, v'lo yoi l'malcha kazav. The only thing you should keep in mind is that it's not befitting for the king to be looked at as a liar. Apparently, the only reason they were engaging in a conversation with him to begin with is because when he approached him and started asking questions, he said to them, don't worry, don't be scared. I'm not going to hurt you. You can answer the questions honestly. I'm not going to hurt you. So once he says that he's fed up and he wants to say, now he's like, oh, I'm going to kill all of you with the Gezeiras HaMelech. So they say, you could do whatever you want. You're the king. We can't stop you. But you should realize that if you do that, you're a liar. And it's not befitting for a king to be a liar. Halabai, all politicians should think like that. Miyad Abish Yason Levushin the Argvin Bishadi Minicha the Dava al Tzavarein. So he says, you know what, you're right. So he decided he dressed the Ziknei Negev up in beautiful, very fancy purple clothing, and he gave them golden necklaces and put it around their necks. And he says, Amr Lahen, Ba'ina the Azul of Medinas Afriki. Says, I have a problem. I've got to go to Africa. I'm trying to conquer the world. I've got to wage war in Africa. So you guys seem very, very wise. Can you please give me advice on how I should go to Africa and how I can be successful there? Amrulay, they say back to him, Lo Masis Uzlis. They say to him, you want good advice? Don't go. Don't go to Africa. Depaski Hari Choshech, because there is a very large mountain range of mountains of darkness, and it will be very difficult for you to navigate your way through there, and you're probably not going to be successful in traveling to Africa because of this mountain range. Amr Lahen, Lo Sagi Lo Azlina. He says to them, I'm sorry, it's not an option. I've got to go. There's no option not to go. Amtu Hachi, Mashayan Alchu, Elamai Avid. And once that's the case, that I have to go, I'm asking you, please give me some advice. How should I do it? How should I be successful? Amrulay, they say back to him, fine. If you have to go, Aisi Chami Le'uvai, Deparshi Bahavra. You should take these certain kinds of donkeys, which come from some place of these Lubai, Lubian, I don't know what Lubai is. It comes from Lubai. The Mefarish here says that somehow these have to do with donkeys that originated in Mitzrayim. You take these type of donkeys, they're able to navigate even in darkness. The Aisi Kibure Demasni. So you should have these donkeys lead you all the way down to Africa through this dark mountainous range. And when you are traveling with these donkeys, you should bring coils of rope. The Qatar Bahagisa, and you should tie these pieces of rope occasionally through your journey. And therefore, Dechi Achis Beorcha Naktis Begavayu of Asil Asrach. And then if you hold onto this rope the whole time, and then when you go back, you just continue pulling onto the rope and following the path of the rope. It's like leaving some sort of a bread, a cookie crumb trail or something in the forest. So you follow the trail of the rope, and you'll be able to return back to your original standpoint, your original place, once you've fought the war. I'm not sure why the donkeys can only get them into Africa and not get them out of Africa, but this was good advice nonetheless. Avad Hachi, so he listened to them. He listened to them and he got to this place in Africa, to the city, to Kule Nashi, and the entire city was made up of women. He said, all right, I'm in Africa, I'm here to fight. I'm going to come fight you. But these women, they had another plan. Amrulay, they said to him, if you kill us, Yomer Nashi Katal. What are people going to say? They're going to say, Alexander the Great, he killed a city full of women. What kind of cruel ruler is that? He kills women who can't defend themselves. And if you fight us and you don't kill us and we kill you instead, so then it's even worse. Yomer Maka to Kalinu Nashi. You're going to be known as the king who was killed by women. So the women gave him a great argument. It's a no-win situation. So he says, Amr Lahen Aisi Li Nama. He says, you know what? You're right. It's a no-win situation. Either I'm a cruel king who kills women, or I'm a king who's so weak that I get killed by a city of women. So instead, why don't you just bring me some bread? Aisi Le Nama. They bring him some bread, but this bread wasn't any bread. The Dava. It was golden. Aftura didava, and they put it out to him on a golden table, turning the page onto Lama Bez Amud Bez. Amr Lahu, he says to them, Mi achli inish nama didava? Is there such a person who could eat golden bread? How can you eat golden bread? It's not edible. Amrule, ela inama ba'isla, inama ba'is lo havalach ba'asrach nama lamech deshalkis ba'asislacha? Is it, this is kind of weird. Do you not have any bread from where you came from that when you come to us, you ask us that we need to give you bread? You couldn't have brought bread with you? Kinafik, the Osi, Kosev, Ababa de Mechuza, when he left, he had nothing to say to them. And when he left the city of women, he wrote on the gate of the city, of this city of women. Ana Alexandris, Mukdon, Havisi Shatya. I, Alexander of Mukdon, Alexander the Great, I was a fool, ad Asisi Lamedinas Afriki Dinasha, until I came to the African country where it was, which was a country of women, and they, the Yalfis Eitza Minasha, and they gave me good advice, and that's, you turned me into someone who had a little bit of seichel. Kishakil Vasi, when he continued, he got to a, he continued on his way, Vasi, and he came, Yosef Ahu Maina, and he approached, and he sat near a spring. Ka'achol Nama, he was sitting and eating his bread. Apparently, he had bread that wasn't golden. Havu Biyadei, Guldoni Demalcha. And in his hands were fish that were very, very salty. So, Bahadi the Mechuvari Luhu, and as he was sticking them in this spring in order to clean them off and take a little bit of salt and get a little salt out of the taste, Nafal Bahu Recha. This smell came upon him that was a very, very pleasant smell. Amar, he said, Shmamina, hi Aina, mi Gan Eden Asi. He says, this spring, it must be coming from Gan Eden. That's why it smells so delicious. Igi the Amri, Shako Mehan Humaya. In some people say that the story didn't happen with a salty fish that were being washed off in the spring, but rather he approached the spring when he was on his way back, and he sits to the, goes to the spring, and he takes from the spring some water, Tara Ba'ape, and he splashes it onto his face. And that's when he smelled this great smell. Iga the Amri, some say, Idli Kule Adzamata Lepischa Degan Eden. Some people say that he didn't put the fish in the water, he didn't splash water on his face, but rather he was walking along the length of the spring until he reached the opening of Gan Eden, Ramakala, and he opened up his voice, Pischuli Bava, and he says, please open the gates for me. Amrule, and he heard a response back, Ze Ashar Lashem Vigomer, this is the gates of Hashem. Amr Lahon, Ananami Malka, Ana Michshel Chashivna. I'm also a king. I'm also very important. Let me come in. Havalu Midi. And if you're not going to let me in, at least give me something. So Yavule Gulgasa Chada. They gave him an eyeball. As Yatakli Lukule Dahava Vikaspa Dide Bahade Lohava Maskale. And he took this eyeball, he put it on his scale, and he put all of his gold and all of his silver on one side of the eyeball on the other side, and the eyeball weighed more than all his gold and all his silver. Amr Lahon, Lerabonan Mai Hai. He went to their bun and he said, what's with this eyeball? What kind of eyeball is this? Amru, they said to him, Gulgasa de'ena de'bishra, de'bishra v'dama, de'lo kasaveya. He says, you know what this eyeball is? This is the eyeball of a human being who is never satisfied. No matter how much he has, it's never satisfied. So therefore, you put all the gold and all the silver on the other side of the scale, and this eyeball will always weigh more because it's never going to be satisfied with any amount of gold and silver. Amr Luhu said back to him, so what should I do with this? So shakli klili afra v'kasya. So he took some dirt and he covered it up. Sorry, how do you know this is the case? So he took some dirt and he covered it up. And after he did that, la'altar takla. And as soon as he covered up the eye, the gold and silver weighed much more than the eye. Dersiv sheol v'avdun lotis ba'ena, that under the Gehenna and being lost will not be satisfied. And the puzzle continues and compares this to the eye that is never satisfied. So if you cover up the eye and it doesn't see the gold and the silver, so then then it could be satisfied. Tanan de Elio, they send the name Elio, Gehenim Lamala Min Hierarchia. They say that in the name of of Tebe Eliyahu, that Gehenim hell is above the Rakia. The Yesh Omer Lachure Hare Choshech. And some people say it's beyond those dark mountains that lead to Africa. Tana Rabbi Chia Kolosek B'Torah Belayla. Rabbi Chia says anyone who studies Torah at night, Shechino Kenegdo, the Shechina is with him. Shneimar Kumi Roni Belayla, get up and sing at night. LeRosh Hashmuros at the beginning of the watches in the base of Mikdash. Shivchli Kamayim Libeich Nochach Pnei Hashem. Pour out your heart to Hashem. Amar Rabbi Lezer Ben Azariah, Talmid Chacham Marv Shalom Yolam. That Talmid Chachamim, they bring peace to the world. As the pasuk says, Shneimar V'Chol Banayach Midi Hashem. All of the people who are learning, the students of Hashem, V'Rav Shalom Banayach, and these students are bringing Shalom to the world. So Hadron Alach. Lo Hayu Koftin, that ends the fourth parak for Maseches Tamid. We are definitely well over our 20-minute slot, but do we want, I think it's Kedai, let's just do the first five Mishnayos of the second parak so that we're in good shape. So let's do the first five Mishnayos, and then we'll hold it there. Amar Lahim Amamuna, going back now, we're finished with Alexander the Great, we're going back to the appointed Kohen who's overseeing the process of the Avodah and the Beis HaMikdash. Amar Lahim Amamuna, The Mamuna says, if you remember, we left our Kohanim. They had started the process of the Karban Tumah. They had gone into the base, into the Heichal, and they had cleared away the ashes from the Mizbeach HaPnimi and some of the candles of the menorah. And they had left a lot of the, they had, you know, we went through all of the very, very beautiful sight of cutting up all the pieces of the animal and putting it halfway up on the ramp of the Mizbeach. And then they went back to Lishvos HaGazis. So now they're back with Mamuna and the Lishvos HaGazis, and the Mamuna says to him, Baruch Hu Bracha Achas. He says, you should daven one bracha. You're not going to daven everything because the Kohanim have a lot of work to do. So they're going to daven an abridged version of Shachris, Vehem Berchu. And they're going to, so they daven Karu Aseres Adibros. Also, you should read the Aseres Adibros. Shema, read Shema, V'hayayim Shemoa, V'yomer. Read the three paragraphs of Shema, and V'hayayim Shemoa, and the paragraph of V'yomer. Birchu es ha'am shalosh brachos. He tells them, give the nation a bracha, three brachos, and they say them the three and they say the three brachos. Emes v'yotziv, the bracha of emes v'yotziv, which is really emes from Shema, and then v'yotziv v'nochem v'kayim v'yoshar. And then he says the second bracha is avoda, the bracha of Ritzei and Shmona Esrei. Ubirchas kohanim, and they also say the birchas kohanim. Ubishabbos and on Shabbos mosifin bracha achas. They add another bracha. The Mishmar Hayose, they add another bracha, not for the whole nation, but for the group of Kohanim that worked in the Beis HaMikdash that week. Their shift is finished, and a new shift is coming in, so they make a bracha for the old shift, so that's leaving. Mishnah Beis, Amar Lahem, so the Mamuna continues and says to this group of Kohanim that are waiting to continue the next part of the Avoda of the in the morning of in the Beis HaMikdash, Amar Lahem, Chadashim L'Ketores Bo V'Yifisu. Anybody who has not ever in their lifetime offered the Ketores, come and be part of this lottery, which we're going to have now to see who's going to offer today's Ketores. The Ketores were only offered by the Kohen once in his lifetime. Every Kohen was only able to offer it once, one and done. Bovi Fisu, come in to get be part of the lottery. Zacha Misha Zacha, and one Kohen would be chosen for the Ketores, for the incense that would be offered that day. Amar Lahem Chadashim Im Yashanim. Then he would say, new people and old people. Doesn't matter if you've done this before or haven't done it before. Come, bo beifisu, come and have a lottery. Mi mala evarim in a kevesh l'mizbeach. Remember, the evarim, the limbs of the carbon tumen, are sitting on the ramp of the mizbeach. We have to figure out who's going to take them from the ramp and actually put them on the mizbeach. So they come and they do that lottery. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov says, no. Hamala evarim lekevesh, hu malos on agavi mizbeach. Those kohanim that lined up in that very interesting row with all the different parts of the animals, and they put it on the ramps in the mizbeach, those same people are going to go back to the ramp, pick up the limbs, and put them on the mizbeach themselves. You don't have a new lottery for that. That's machlokas. So whether or not it's a new person who brings up the animals, or if it's the people who brought them on the ramp to begin with. Mushroom lechazanim. So after this lottery, there were a number of Kohanim that weren't chosen. So they would give their clothes back to the chazanim, who hayu mafshitin osam, who would help them get undressed as bigdehem, take off their bigdei kahuna, because they're not doing any of the avodas. So they have to take off their bigdei kahuna. They shouldn't be wearing the priestly clothing. Velo hayu minichin alehem, elamachnisim bilvad. And they didn't leave any of the bigdei kahuna on them other than the pants. They leave the pants on the coin. The chalonos hayusham, the cause of aleim tashmish lakelim. And inside the lishcha, there were different cubbies that were written on them. This is where the clothes that are used should be contained. So the kohanim would put the clothes back on the shelves, back in the cubbies. Mishazacha b'ketores, the one who got the lottery to offer the ketores, hayanotel es hakaf, the hakaf domin latarka of gadol. He would take a spoon, which is similar to a very large basket, and shel zahav, it was golden, machzeke shlosh kaben, it would hold three kaben, that's how much of the incense it would hold, uvehabaza chaya betocho, and then there was a smaller spoon that was inside of that larger spoon, malay v'gadish ketores, and this spoon was overflowing with ketores, v'kisui hayelo, and there was a cover on top of this, min mututeles, Haya alav milamalon, and there was it was like a drape or some sort of drapery that was on top of the ketores from above it. So we will pick up with Mishnah Hay tomorrow and go with the next daf, and then the next day we will finish Maseches Tamid Emir Tzashem. Thank you all again for joining. He is holding up, doing well, and Pesach preparations are coming along nicely. Always a pleasure to learn with you all. Have a great night.
Yes, Shakoyach. When are we gonna do the Seum then? What time do you want to do this? Will it be? Because I have to tell the people in my soul who are gonna join in the Seum to sign on with us at that time and stuff.
Okay, so my schedule is still too up in the air. I don't know exactly what time it's gonna be, but I'm imagining sometime around 9 a.m. on Wednesday morning.
All right. Yeah, you should maybe even send out an email or an announcement, because a lot of people who aren't even in our sphere are going to want to join in that Seum to be able to have the before and night after fast.
Right. No, for sure. I mean, a lot of shuls are doing it. I don't want to step on the toes of any of the shuls that are doing this. The goal for this is really for everybody who's, you know, to be involved personally in the actual learning. So I don't want to step on toes of shuls, but I'm if anyone wants to spread the word, it's definitely fine. I will let everybody know what time I'm doing it. I just unfortunately don't have my schedule worked out to the minute yet to be able to let everybody know.
All right. Well, I'll
do my best. But either way, you can do it yourself for the shul as well, meaning you don't need me.
Yeah, but I'd like to be a bigger group if that's possible.
I'll do my best to get the timing out as soon as.
But you know, if we don't do it till 9 o'clock, doesn't that mean we can't eat till 9 o'clock?
That's correct. Anybody is welcome. Everyone here is learning it themselves. You can make the seat whatever you want. No one has to take it with me. But yes, if you don't do it till 9 o'clock, you could not eat till 9 o'clock.
I think I prefer to do it earlier. All right, thanks.
Yeah, no problem. It's the goal of this is to enable everyone to make the Seum at their own convenience. That's why we're doing this.
Yes, you can.
Let everyone know when I'm doing it. So if we want to do it together, so that's my tov v'manayim.
Yes, you can.
Have a great night.
All right.